You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Troy Oppie, in today for Gemma Gaudette. From Boise's Basque Block to the Hialdi Festival to the trailing of the sheep in Ketchum, music and food, Basque culture plays a big role here in southern Idaho, and Dan Ansadagi has played a big role in promoting it. Ansadagi teaches traditional Basque push-button accordion music, which accompanies many of these community events. The Boise native follows a lineage of family that came to Idaho at the turn of the century and joined a vibrant and growing Basque community. His family herded sheep and ran boarding homes in Sun Valley. In high school, Dan went to Basque country in Spain and learned the language. Today, we're bringing you two features in our Expressive Idaho series, beginning with Ansadagi's story. Arlie Sommer produced this in partnership with the Idaho Commission on the Arts.
My name is Dan Ansadagi. I'm from Boise, Idaho. I play the button accordion, or the triquitisha, as it is called in Basque. I teach that to a mid-sized group of people from age of 8 is our youngest, and our oldest is pushing 80. We started teaching our Basque button group about 20 years ago.
Basques in Idaho came from a very small region within the entire Basque country. All four of my grandparents grew up in a 3-kilometer radius of the town of Ibarra-Gelua. Many Basques in Boise came from that same area because of the poverty and the fact that they needed to find work.
Basque culture was something that we grew up with without even realizing it was anything different than other people had. We always listened to music as my dad played, and then his band practiced at our house, and he played drums in that band. We always had the Basque music around us. We started dancing at a very early age.
I remember Papa playing accordion for us all the time, and I don't think I didn't start playing music until I played trumpet in high school and stuff, but I didn't really start playing anything else till my dad passed away.
To the town of Oñate in the Basque country that Dr. Pat Beter had organized. It's where I learned Basque, and I also began to learn the chistu. And chistu in Basque just means whistle. Played chistu a little tiny bit, but not very much, because most of the dances that the chistu played for were the boys' dances, and I was dancing. I was always fascinated in the button accordion, and I was able to go back and learn that.
After the 1990 Hialdi that was in Boise, that was really at the beginning of the revival of the button accordion. I just really wanted to learn the button accordion. I loved the looks of it. I loved the sound of it much more than I did the piano accordion. A different instrument plays different music, and it plays it differently, but it just kind of lends itself to a different style of music.
The button accordion is almost always accompanied by the tambourine. Tambourine came in through the south with the Moorish invasion, but then the Basques adapted it and used it.
A jota is a Basque version of a Spanish fandango. It's done in the same time as a waltz, but it's much quicker. It has a feeling of almost like triplets. So instead of a bump, 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 which is a waltz, right? One, two, three, one, two, three. It's more like bup, 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 one, two, three, one, two, three, one, two, three, one, two, three. And so they call those triplets. So it's written like a waltz, but it has a feeling of a march. And then it's followed by the porusalda. And porusalda in Spanish means leek soup. So those are the two, that's the A and the B, or the one and the two, and those two are always done together.
I think that's kind of what Basques have been really good at, is keeping their culture and yet allowing it to change and still remain Basque. It's a different Basque, but because of the fact that we had different resources here and we had different needs. It changed quite a bit. And yet it was always with the music and with the food, we always knew where the origins were.
Last year, Ansaldegui won a National Endowment for the Arts National Heritage Fellowship for his development of Basque music and culture in Idaho. In the second piece we'll share today from Boise State Public Radio's Expressive Idaho series, we head to the Duck Valley Reservation on the border with Nevada, where cattle rancher Ryan Carpenter and his up-and-coming apprentice Monty Cummins craft horse gear. Local leather workers are essential in the cattle industry, and when ranchers are often more than 100 miles from the nearest tack shop, Carpenter and Cummins work together almost daily to hone and preserve this craft. Here's their story.
My name is Ryan Carpenter. This morning we're here in Waiheke, Nevada on the Duck Valley Indian Reservation. I'm a high school teacher, I'm a rancher, and I'm a leather worker.
It's funny how it's all intertwined. You know, you kind of stop and look and you go, well, if I didn't do this in my life, well, then I wouldn't have any reason to do this and this and this.
My name is Monty Cummins. I am 17 years old. We are going to be doing a bunch of our daily life type of stuff today, along with our horses and our leather work.
They've been getting saddled pretty much every day for the last couple of weeks. But like I said, short rides, nothing too long. I'm just trying to keep it to where it's more matter of fact to them and they don't really mind it. Saddle that I put on, I built for myself last year. For the most part, everything that we use, we build. The stirrups even on my saddle. We order the wood blanks and they cover them, and I actually covered these stirrups. For Monty and I mean, that's, you know, it's kind of a case of we're going to build it and then we're going to use it. And that's how you, I think that's how you make your stuff better.
I've kind of grown in the lifestyle of it, and I only wasn't wanting to do hunting and fishing when I was younger. I was always wanting to be on horse somewhere.
One of the biggest things that I saw with Mont was he was committed to being here every day. He'd show up, we would work, you know, we'd ride horses, and we'd go in the shop and work on some stuff. And some days it was just a little bit, because like he said, he'd have to go home and do chores. He was committed to continually working on stuff.
Monty started some head stalls, and they're all the pieces are cut out, and then he glued the liner pieces on them and sewed them on. And now what we're doing is gonna trim off all the excess liner. And then after that, he's gonna edge them, and then he's gonna, well, he might have to sand them, and then he'll edge them and get them all smooth. He's just using a pointed English punch used to get the right shape to the end of your on these head stalls.
So what I'm doing is taking the extra off of the main piece of the head stall.
You know, no matter whether you're making something completely carved or something totally plain, just having all the little finished things at the end done and done good makes a big difference. So one of the things that doing head stalls really makes you learn how to do is sew straight and cut straight. And so like on those edges, trimming that liner, it's not an easy job. And people think, oh, it's just, you're just going to take your knife and trim that liner off. And it's not that easy of a job. And he's doing a really good job. Everybody wants their stuff to look nice and look pretty. But really, truly, functionality needs to come first. And so, you know, I try to use the very best materials that I can, and then what I like the best and what seems to hold up and work the best.
Yeah, that'll work. Good?
Yeah.
Okay. I was using the drill press to sand edges. I missed trimming the extra off. What I like about being in the workshop is all the tools and stuff that you're getting to use, and you have time for yourself and time to work with your partners in there, especially if they need help in there. You could learn things off of each other all the time, no matter what it is.
If you don't know where you came from, then it's kind of hard to figure out where you're going. And at the same side too, if we don't maintain a lot of these traditions, they will go away. And I don't really care if it's a native tradition or if it's like leather work and saddle making and that kind of thing. And so if we don't maintain those and we don't pass those on, then they'll be lost.
I believe it's important to keep the cycle, I should say. The cycle of it, because then it could just repeat whoever you teach.
Monty, he's not out there just to help. He's got his own cows. He pays attention. Hey, why are we pushing these cows up here? Or where do these cows go? Or like we put salt out last weekend. And if that stuff doesn't get passed on, then no one's going to know.
Just the time spent on a lot of stuff, I try to be consistent about it.
As long as we're still riding horses, we're just going to keep building stuff. There's no way around that.
There are great photos from both these stories, produced by Arlie Sommer, on our website, boisestatepublicradio.org. Thanks to the Idaho Commission on the Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts as well. You've been listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Troy Oppie. Have a great weekend.